Oh yeah, we're here on X Squared Radio just listening to a little music from Muse. Well, there you have it, people. Uprising. Thought it was an appropriate song to begin our second hour with Suzanne Taylor. We're discussing her movie, What on Earth? It's a crop circle movie. I really felt good when I watched it. Really amazing content, good interviews, great man on the street feel to it. It's not one of those contrived productions. It really makes you feel good. The photography is amazing. There were some really cool things that you did in the movie, like fly in an ultralight. And I really like the shot where it was a zoomed-in shot of a helicopter flying over one of the crop circles, and then the camera zoomed out to show the whole crop circle, and this little bitty helicopter was just a small portion of this giant crop circle. Really amazing shot.
Well, you know what we did, actually, if you think about it, that you can see the helicopter blades turning around. Now, how can you see blades turning around? They go too fast, right? Well, in fact, you know, a lot of the time when you're up in the air shooting, your camera's jiggling, and they have, you know, control devices to reduce that. But particularly when you're up in one of those little microlights, they're jiggly, you know. They're not all that stable. And the shot, that shot that we were using, the camera was not all that steady. And if we had shown you the footage as we had it, you would have seen jiggle. So what my editor did was my editor slowed it down. And so that's why you see the blades of the helicopter turning.
Now, oh, that's noticed. Interesting. I never thought about that. I thought it was just a function
of I think that's quite a dramatic shot. I mean, it's not exactly a spoiler that we're telling people because you have to see it. Yeah, but it is very, you know, people gasp when they see that, because when you're above, when you're right above the helicopter, it looks like you're above one circle, one, you know, decently sized circle. Well, there are 409 circles in that formation. That's the biggest one ever, the size of two football fields. And so when microlight, whatever the whatever we were up in, helicopter microlight, when it moves up, and you can gradually see more and more and more, and then the helicopter becomes a pinpoint almost. You're up above it. You see the whole thing. It's filling your frame, and you can't even make out that it's a helicopter anymore. It's so big.
Yeah, it dissolves into the crop circle.
People aghast.
By the way, Earth Explorers, I don't want you to be alarmed, but there's a heck of a thunderstorm outside of our studio right now. So if you hear booming, nothing's going on. It's just a little light show from Mother Nature. If it doesn't knock out the internet, which it has been known to do on this program, we had Jose Arguez on, and we were just about to make a very key point, and bam, I mean, the power just went out, totally dark. Took us about a minute to get back on the air. Very auspicious indeed. Let's talk about let's talk about how far and wide these crop circles go. They're not just in Wiltshire, England, are they?
No, indeed. They've been in some 40 countries. Although, if there, however many there are, usually in the last few years, there have been give or take 150. Then again, you don't know how many are hoaxed, but let's just say 150. 75 in England, 75 spread out through the rest of the countries. The only other countries that get that have a phenomenon to deal with where they have enough so that, you know, there's a substantive body of formation. Germany gets a fair number, and the Netherlands get some number of them, and the rest get one or two, or we get them in the States here, although the last couple of years we haven't, but sometimes we've had eight, maybe 10, you know, in a year, and it's some fairly decent ones. You know, as you know, I have a montage of international crop circles in the film, and I think I have three very lovely ones from the United States.
Yeah, and there are some in Mexico, and they're in Germany, and, you know, these hoaxers, they don't have, you know, unlimited frequent flyer miles, and I can't believe that people would be so uniformly connected as to be able to create these things with similar treatments of the crops right down to the knuckles on the ground. It leads one to believe that, okay, there probably is a group of anarchists who are either poking fun at the metaphysics world, or they're well-funded to kind of deflate whatever following or whatever economic force is gaining in the crop circle world. I imagine that there are trade shows and conferences and everything that talk about these. And as millions of people have seen them on television and on the internet, and maybe hundreds of thousands have visited them over the last 20 or 30 years, the message that they're real, that you feel differently, that you have an experience when you're on the inside of them, is spreading all the way in the upper Northwest. I've even seen some of these films and listened to conferences of people talking about them. Ed and Chris Sherwood live in Santa Monica, I think. They've been out there for a number of years. There's kind of a movement that goes with it. Maybe they're being funded to defuse this or to break up the momentum of it, you know, to try to make it impossible to tell the difference between the real thing and the hoaxed thing, although they haven't been able to match the energy field in the middle of it. But how do they explain away the fact that this occurs in dozens of countries all over the world?
Well, indeed. You know, when you try to really get serious about nailing what's going on here and don't just follow your kind of instinctive imagination, I don't mean instinctive in a good way, I mean we're in a kind of collective, you know, idea of the world here, and when something outside the box appears, we are rightfully skeptical. You know, nobody likes to be conned, as somebody else in my movie says, And, you know, of course, you don't just buy every silly idea that comes along. But when you pay attention, when you really look at all the evidence, it becomes even more impossible that these things are all being hoaxed than that they are coming from some mysterious force, as wild as that is. And it is wild. It's very wild. You know, you're dealing in a universe that is so incredibly vast, and our nearest neighbor, you know, would take us forever to get to, whatever. So how can we be visited? How does this work? But then again, the ways of the world and the ways of science and possibility and what have you are also awesome. I mean, you think that here we are in a universe with billions, in a galaxy with billions of stars, our galaxy, and then there are billions of galaxies, and then they say there's even more universes. Oh my gosh. I mean, you just have to be humble and be in awe of everything that's going on, and then nothing seems too fantastic.
Well, that's true. So, I have people ask me questions like,
Of course, it's also so thrilling.
Well, I have people ask me questions all the time. You don't believe in UFOs, do you? And I'm not much of a belief person. You know, I'm a scientist, but I come back at them with an equally ludicrous question, like, you don't believe we're alone in the universe, do you?
Yeah, right. What's your PhD in, Brooks?
Physics.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's made me thoroughly unemployable, let me tell you.
Questions I can't answer.
Yeah, that's why we do. That's why I do radio, because I'm unemployable now.
Oh God.
Yeah, and that's kind of ruined everything too, because I dumbed down my resume one time. You're going to love this story. I was teaching mathematics at Gaston College in North Carolina. And I needed more income, so I am a certified quality engineer, and there happened to be a factory very, very close to the college, about two blocks away. And so I said, I'll go in there and get a job as a quality engineer, and I'll fill in my daytime, and then in the afternoon and evenings I'll teach mathematics to people who want to go on and get upper, more advanced degrees. Well, I dumbed down my resume, and I walked in the door. And the HR manager met me there, and the plant manager, and they said, "Are you the Brooks Agnew?" And I went, "Yeah."
Uh-oh.
And the HR manager said, "Would you autograph my book?"
Oh,
I knew right there I was not getting the job. So,
<Uh-oh>.
So, and I didn't either. So that's kind of the curse that goes with it. But you know, I really enjoy what I'm doing, and I can tell. When I watch you in the film and the camera goes to you interviewing someone else or flying an ultralight, that you had a blast making this movie.
Oh, indeed. You know, what a delight. You know, I'm so fascinated by this and had this, sense of mission that I should bring this information to the world. And, you know, it isn't like working in a factory. You're in the middle of a miracle. And you're taking pictures of it and making sense of it and talking to fascinating people. The people who are plugged into this, who form a community that gathers in England every summer from all over the world. We all know each other. We come every summer. We compare notes. We hang out, you know, in the pubs together, trying to do our thing to take the pictures, write the articles, amass a body of work that's credible. These are people who left other professions. We have an architect who is teaching architecture at USC. We have fabulous artists who had real, you know, careers, and this thing just hooked them. one visit or a first exposure, and well, just like me, what's that? And the more they learn, the more fascinated they become. And I mean, people have left their husbands, and there's one story in the movie that's funny about a divorce that ensued from a different opinion about the crop circle phenomenon. But people, actually, that research community, they've done that. They've left their other lives because it's like in Close Encounters, you know, those people, I've got to get there, I've got to, you know, get involved. People have actually really done that, and then, you know, that 20 years later, they're still there, and they're still, you know, singing the praises.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have people just kind of pop in for a couple of weeks and then go back to their normal lives? Is this a mecca of sorts? Are there enough hotels to stay in? Is this a place that people go out at every single night and wait for them to happen before their eyes?
Oh, absolutely. You're in a magic territory there in this little concentrated area in England where most of them appear. And it's sizzling all summer. The bed and breakfasts are, there's lots of bed and breakfasts. They're all full. It's hard to get a room. There are tour buses that come by. There are people leading tours. Actually, if people do want to go over, you're much better off going with somebody, particularly the first time, who joining some kind of group. And they're lovely. I mean, they're not commercial, you know, in that kind of mechanistic corporate sense in any way. They're just the enthusiastic crop circle researchers have taken to leading tours because, you know, some of them have left their jobs. They don't have other. So one of the sources of income is now plying the crop circle trade. And but they're lovely people to go with. They really know their stuff, and they know the territory. They know, you know, how to find them. And people have fabulous times. But, you know, I don't think there's anybody who's ever been in a good crop circle who hasn't been permanently altered in, you know, their perspective on the world.
Now that's powerful.
Over there and maintaining skepticism or ridicule or, you know, the...
So nobody goes into a real crop circle and comes out of it and says they're still fake.
No, never, 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 never. People are just fundamentally affected in very powerful ways by the experience of being in them. And there's nothing quite like that. I mean, for all the pictures you'll see, there's nothing like actually being in a good crop circle. You're just in awe. How could this be? I mean, what is it doing there? You know, such a peculiar thing.
I'm reminded of the movie Contact and the character L, who is this atheistic, not a believer in anything metaphysical whatsoever. It's got to be facts. Although she joins this CSETI team where she's searching for extraterrestrial intelligence, and she's listening and listening and listening. Something's driving her, which might be the loss, premature loss of her father. But when you watch the movie and you watch Jodie Foster's face, not what she sees, but watch her face as she sees what it is the director has told her she's looking at. And that's the change. That's what I see happen to people when they go someplace and they see a UFO for the first time in their lives.
They're permanently changed, no question.
Yeah, it is really incredible. And that's...
That was a wonderful movie, by the way. I remember of all the movies, and I don't, you remember it better than I do in the details, but I do remember thinking, oh, this is an important movie. This is one that, you know, is really on the money.
Let me ask you a question about the crop circles, because most of them occur in Wiltshire or Glastonbury. Are there areas or particular farms that get hit with these over and over again? Do they reoccur on the same spot, or are they copied in other places, or are they just one of a kind and they appear someplace different every time?
Many questions here. Well, they're never duplicated exactly, although there are pattern groups. So, for instance, the first fractal arrived in 1996, and ever since then we've gotten patterns that are based on the idea of fractals. But you never get an exact replication of any of them, no carbon copy. Sometimes you get inverses. You get the crop is down and up, and then in an inverse, it's up and down, you know, a kind of a mirror image of a crop circle. And those are always fascinating, the various mirror images that occur. Now, what were the other parts of your question? Let's see.
I wanted to know if they occurred in the same spot over and over again.
Oh, the same fields, right. Well, there's one field in particular that you can virtually count on. It's the one that received the formation that got the attention of the world, and we do quite a bit in the movie about that one. It was in 1990. The phenomenon had been going on for some time, but this one was much bigger, had a different shape. It just changed the nature of the phenomenon. It was like an up-leveling of the whole pattern reality of the phenomenon. And indeed, that's when the world started to pay attention. And that field, it's called East Field, gets them every... I don't think there's been a summer that they haven't had them. And some of the major ones land in that field. And that may be because they like them. You know, there are other farmers who get them, and they'll cut them out. They'll take their whatever machine it is and make, you know, drive it through so that they don't want people in their field. Some of them think it's, you know, it's the boys from the pub, and they're really furious. Others, whatever their reasons are. And I think that pretty much there's a scattering of the phenomenon in the other fields. There's lots of fields. These are small family farms over there still. We're not doing corporate farming in this area of the world. And I don't know that there's any other field that gets them year after year, although I know there have been fields that have had more than one or, you know, different years. But Eastfield is the one that gets them recurringly. And it's the field where before the phenomenon got sort of, we got distracted by the claims of those two guys that the world sort of bought into that there was no real phenomenon. They had mounted a couple of very significant watches on that field. BBC was involved, Japanese television was involved, because it was the field they could count on. Not that, you know, during the course of their watch they'd necessarily get one, but, you know, if they were going to watch anywhere, this is the field they were going to watch. And then funny things happened on those watches. Like there was one, I think it was for 3 weeks, the day after they packed up, they got a crop circle. Because, you know, the crop circle makers are, you can't fool them. They're watching us, you know. Yeah. They know what's going on. They seem to have a sense of humor, and so, you know, we leave, they come. And then there was one instance where, you know, it's very foggy in England, or it can be. And there was one instance in one of those watches where some kind of major fog descended. They did have motion sensors on the field. Nothing went off. No motion sensors went off. And when the fog lifted, there was a crop circle there.
Oh my gosh.
During those couple of watches, a circle appeared just outside the range of the cameras in the next field. So, you know, they're kind of saying, ha, 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 you can't catch us, you know, but with a gentle wink, you know. We like that about the phenomenon.
That's interesting. One of my most faithful listeners, Alex, says, does your guest realize that most of these man-made crop formations appear in areas that have a shamanistic culture that use the formation to communicate with their gods and attract doors to their word? They're kind of instant hinges or temple structures of pagan traditions.
Well, I don't know about that. I haven't heard that. I mean, we've got lots of pagan... This little area has been a ritualistic... with Stonehenge, you know, everybody knows about Stonehenge, and there are other artifacts that have been left from before that... this is a very manipulated landscape in this little area. Sacred ceremony's been done there for years. It's such gorgeous, gorgeous country. I mean, if you were going to, you know, wanted to commune with the divine, you couldn't find more beautiful countryside to do it in. And I think that's one of, you know, people often say, well, why are the circles there? You know, why the concentration in this area? And I think that's one of, again, we're speculating. We don't know. We can only, you know, look at the evidence and come up with our speculations about it, because we won't know till they tell us what some of the actual answers are to our questions. But one of the speculations that we do come up with about why this area is because it has such an ancient tradition of ceremony and sacredness. And all over the world, in fact, wherever the crop circles appear, they do tend to arrive near something ancient. Like in America, they'll typically come near Indian burial grounds. And they not only appear near them, they actually, all over the world, again, part of the phenomenon, they're very carefully placed in the landscape so that if there's a directionality to them, the mandalas won't have a direction. But actually, internally, sometimes there are things that point, and if you go and look, where's the sacred site that they've landed near, and what is the shape of the formation, the directionality, the pointing, the way it's laid out will go right to the center of the sacred site, or it will tangent it. It will go right to the side of it. In other words, somebody has made a choice about that. It's not accidental. And in fact, these things don't land where they cross farmers' fields. They'll land internal to a field. Sometimes they'll take up the whole space of a particular field, but they won't go out over the edges. Again, indication of intelligent design. Something has thought this out. Something has, it's not random, it's not accidental, it's not casual. If you want to get into why would this phenomenon be occurring? What's the point? Or are we being helped? And how could it be helping us? And I think it's to inform us that we're not the only intelligence, because once we realize that, everything changes, and we need a massive change. We need a change of perspective where we're not so violent with one another, where we respect the earth.
Right.
You know, we're in big trouble. We need a change of fundamental ideas about what we're all doing here.
Oh, yeah. We've often talked about that on this program, for instance, the U.S. government in 2010 is going to spend $1.3 trillion on defense and only $170 million on space exploration.
Well, that whole war thing, I mean, I just, you know, I call me naive or juvenile or something. I don't get it. Why are we doing that? I mean, God, we've gotten so good at it. We've gotten so capable of destroying life on Earth. Why? I mean, this is such an incredible magic privilege to be alive, tough as it may get. Still, being human, wow, what a trip. And how can we be so ignorant and primitive, actually? Since we're so sophisticated in our technology, how can we be so primitive in our perspective?
It's true. I mean,
you read the paper, you listen to television, it's so ordinary. The Department of Defense has issued, and so many people have been killed. And it's like, what? I listen and I can't believe this. And yet, of course, I can. But how can we be doing this? How can we still be behaving in such primitive fashion when we're so far along in our capacity to do harm, you know?
Well, hopefully, I know how I felt when I was watching your film and when I finished watching your film. Maybe we should send a copy of this to each one of the members of the Joint Chiefs and see if we can...
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Soften it a little bit.
Hey, you're planting a thought.
And, you know, it's interesting. Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're coming here and they're saying, okay, we'll put these patterns down and people will watch them and they will see that as sovereign as they think their airspace is, we can come in and we can leave a message of peace.
Yeah, leave a message that other intelligence is engaging with you. Hello, when are you going to get it?
Right. Well, you know, one of the things I watched on YouTube, it wasn't in your film, and I don't know if it's real, and I want to ask you.
Check me out.
It shows a couple of lights flying in, kind of doing a big S turn, and then heading out away from the camera, and underneath these lights, in the crops, forms the circle right there on film.
Yeah.
Is it real or is it hoaxed?
Wouldn't it be nice if it was real? You know, that came, that situation occurred in 1996. And It was the most thrilling thing to come down the pike. The Crop Circle community was beside itself with excitement. And then little chinks started to appear, this, that, and the other that didn't add up, that didn't make sense. And then the controversy started. Well, the controversy lasted literally, Brooks, for years. And you had your camps, and there was evidence. But then, oh, no, the overriding situation, that evidence was dummied up or whatever. And, you know, it was just a grand morass for years until finally the consensus seems to be now. And even so, there are holdouts who say, no, 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 it's for real. But I would say that 95% of the people who know what they're talking about will tell you now that it was done in a laboratory.
Wow.
I'm sorry to tell you that.
But it's an accurate reenactment of what has been seen.
Yes, exactly. Oh, exactly. Exactly. You could definitely see it that way. No question.
I just, you know, I'm so fascinated by the iconic nature of the Crop Circle. Is it an alphabet? Is it a piece in a series, a story, or some kind of grand message that in their mind only takes a few minutes to tell, but in our lifetime it takes 100 years for the sentence to unfold?
Well, all of the above, we might say. Seriously, from many angles that you look at this, yes, yes, it would be that, it would be the other. And then, but the people inquiring usually are meaning to ask, well, is that what it's all about? Is it a puzzle where when we get the final piece, we'll know the picture? Or is it an alphabet, like hieroglyphs, and when we finally decipher it all, we'll get the message? And again, we're speculating. I don't think so. I think all of it is a bombardment of different ways of showing us that an intelligent source is delivering these things. And when are we, you know, when are we going to finally get added all up and say, whoa, this cannot be accidental, and it certainly cannot all be hoaxed, and something is, or some things, is delivering all of this, and it's smarter than we are because it's visiting us. We're not visiting it. And they must be out there scratching their heads going, when are these people going to get it? How much do we have to tell them?
How much more plain can we make it?
You want me to tell you something that's not in the film that you probably don't know?
Oh, yeah.
A whole different dimension of how intelligence is being delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring it on.
Yes or no question.
Sure.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, I'm here. Tell me, what do you
got? Okay. Oh, yeah, you said yes, right. I'm sure you said yes. Okay, so one year, not quite sure which year it was. It was in the 4, 5, 6 years ago, one of those years. One of the researchers got a bright idea to check something. He had noticed that year there were groups of three that seemed to be coming in, maybe half a dozen groups of three, patterns that were very, very similar. And it was kind of unusual that they actually came down to being groups of three. And he thought, well, why don't I put it on a map, geographic, you know, and see where are these groups of three? How do they relate to one another? How do the three in each group relate to one another? Is there a relationship? And what he discovered was startling and yet another evidence of intelligence process. Something intelligent put this together. You don't even know about all the intelligence until you think of the right question to ask. You don't get the answer until you ask the question. So the question he asked was, is there anything going on geographically in these groups of three? So they plotted it on a map. These formations were miles apart, 6, 7 miles apart, in each group of three, and when they looked at the map, what they discovered was almost to a precision, each group of three formed an isosceles triangle, and that's a triangle where two sides are the same and the third side is different. Well, is that an accident? It doesn't seem to be. It seems to be, as I say, something that was thought up on the other side. Let's see, what else can we do that will encode intelligence in these things so that these people get it eventually. And look what they did. They sent down groups of three in isosceles triangles on the landscape. Well, I just, you know, I found that fascinating. If I'd had more, you know, if I could have done a film that had everything in it, I would have put that in the film.
Hmm. Well, it would be, you know, in geometry, we realize that any three points lay in a plane. That's
yeah,
how
you can make a triangle out of anything. Yes.
Yeah, two-dimensional space is created by that. Now, it is odd to say that the point at the apex of the acute angle happens to be equidistant in between the two points that make up the base angles. That is unique.
Very
unique.
I mean, you can draw isosceles triangles, you know, no big deal, but that these groups of three were delivered that way in the landscape, miles apart, whoa! Well, there are all kinds of correlations like that, that the people who really spend their lives poring over this information will come up with all kinds of fascinating things when they plot it on maps and what have you. Oh, my goodness, look, you know, and as I say, until they do these things, you know, the information is just floating out there, and it doesn't add up to anything until somebody decides to look for something. And so often when they look for something, they get something, you know?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Suzanne, are they all veteran circle chasers out there, or are there a lot of newbies, a lot of tourists that come in for one or two days hoping to see something and then on back to Florida or wherever they're from?
It's hot tourist territory. Absolutely. I went the first time as a tourist. I joined a group. And it was Stonehenge, crop circles, and, you know, other sacred sites in the area. No, it's teeming with tourists in the summertime. Yeah. And we have a little cafe kind of gathering place. The tour buses go there. You can... they're actually changing their location this year, so I can't tell you where it is because they haven't got it settled yet. But, you know, you can go to a place.
Oh, we lost the call. We'll work on it with the producer here and see if we can't get her back. It's we are in the middle of a terrible thunderstorm right now. It's kind of passed over the house. Slammed us with a bunch of hail about 15 minutes ago. I don't know if you heard it over the radio. But we'll try to get Suzanne back. It'll just be a moment. Don't go away. Also, I wanted to make sure that you knew that you could be part of the program tonight by calling 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. If you've been on one of these tours, why don't you give us a call and tell us what you found or didn't find. If you want to go on one of these tours, let us know. What's your motivation? When are you planning on going? How are you putting together a group of friends? Why do you want to go? And I would very much like to know how you feel about the crop circle phenomenon, the movement, the art show that's been going on pretty much your entire life, unless you're more than 100 years old, which you could be. It happens to be the fastest growing age group in America. I also want to make sure that you know you can pick up Remembering the Future. It's my newest book, 210 pages or so. This is the book that was born out of the lecture series I did last year called The Physics of the Soul. So this is called Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. The book will be out in print in about 90 days. The publisher is working on it. We're trying to speed it through the process so that we can have it out before the convention in July up at James Gilliland's ranch. And by the way, if you're planning on going to that, this is going to be the year to break all records. So you want to make your way up to that. Anyway, it's at rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. You can get the ebook in your hands, get it read, and you will be given 25% off the printed version when it comes out in 90 days, and you'll be given the audio version of it when that comes out. Now, that's a great bonus for buying the ebook and beating the planet to reading the book, rememberingthefuturebook.com. We're back with our guest, Suzanne. Welcome back. My question, Suzanne, is...
What exciting thing was I saying that got the aliens to interfere with us here?
Well, I think it's a function of the thunderstorm that's been pounding the stuffings out of our city. While you were talking, we had quarter-size hail rake the neighborhood.
Whoa.
And now it's passed on, but I think the lightning struck the cell phone tower out there somewhere. By the way, if you're anywhere on planet or off planet and you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 415-762-1161. Your questions, comments, observations about crop circles. The question that I wanted to ask was relative to... you mentioned that intelligence is behind crop circles coming to the earth, that these beautiful patterns aren't just artwork. They're not just there to make fancy calendars. When you go there and you actually physically experience the crop circle, you're changed. And I asked the question, the tourists that come, are they all newbies? Are they veterans? Is it gaining momentum, losing momentum? Is there a change occurring in the consciousness of the earth because of crop circles?
Well, certainly everybody who visits is profoundly affected. And, you know, when is the 100th monkey going to, you know, set foot in the crop circle? I don't know. Who knows? We certainly don't have a preponderance of people who are paying attention to them, even though it's a robust tourist attraction. And I don't mean to denigrate it by saying it's a tourist attraction. It's wonderful that people come from all over the world, and they do. There are many books that have been written that are, you know, popular. There's certainly a field of intense interest, and it grows all the time. But how many, you know, what percentage of our population, who knows? Certainly not the preponderance. Most people still, because, you know, anything that's really different, so different from ordinary reality, it takes some doing to, you know, for people to pay enough attention to it to know what's going on. And it's very challenging to the power structure. You get something that really will change the way humanity thinks, and the power structure is not sympathetic. You're not going to get support from all of the wheels that are enmeshed to create the worldview that we're in.
Oh, come on. So they spend a lot of money on propaganda and advertising.
Even active resistance.
Yeah, they spend a lot of money on propaganda and advertising just to make sure we think the way that we do, like sheep, you know, heading for wherever we're heading. Suzanne, we have a caller. I think the name is Nansaluwa from New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you so much for all this information, okay, and all the work that has been done. One of the questions that I have is that we talk a lot about, you know, understanding so-called intelligence, okay? And maybe what we're dealing with is so unlike what we perceive as intelligence that has anyone ever gone in, like a spiritual person who... can get energy from the other side and stuff like that, to go in and actually just ask, what is this here for? How will it help us? Give me some information. You know, like a spiritually, and I say spiritually just because I think a person who is a little more grounded in knowing that there's something outside of this world, not religiously, but outside of this world, would be able to ask, tell us what it is. You know, I believe in, I don't say I believe, I know that when you ask, you receive. Like in the areas where they're happening, the people are enjoying them being there, so they receive more of them. But has anyone ever asked, while they're in the crop circle, can you give us some information as to what this is here for?
That's a good question.
Well, I understand perfectly what you're saying, and indeed, the channels will there are a fair number of channels who are what would we say, some of the more highly respected channels, you know, the ones who mm-hmm. have maintained a presence and a visibility over the years, who have done that and who have come out with their information. I can't, of the things that they've said, I can't get any smarter or more informed or have more insight than the fact that we are being engaged by other intelligence. They don't seem to, I mean, there may not be any more to say than that in terms of the message or the point that's being made by whatever is delivering these. You know, if they wanted to make some, if they wanted to tell us something, you people should da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, they could be much more directive about it. They could write it out in the field. Well, they don't seem to want to do that. They seem to want to lure us, you might say, into realizing that they are communicating with us and in the knowledge that that will change our world. And it doesn't need to be any more than that. And in fact, you know, how can we have an intelligent dialogue or how can they be telling us anything when we're not really receptive? You know, we're not listening. How could, you know, we would just be ranting at the straight world saying, hey, hey, the crop circles told us, you know. Well, they just don't seem to be doing that. And I think also one other thing I would say about that is that this lack of hitting us over the head, you know, it's the question of why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, first of all, I think we would shoot them. But aside from that,
yeah,
as we study, as we reach for them, including the channels, including the spiritual, you know, mastery kind of people who do inquire. But as we do all of that and as we intuit and interpret and whatever, then we have actually really realized something. It is part of us. It's not something we've been hammered to accept, but it's something that dawns on us. And when it dawns on us, it's us. Now we own it, you know? And I think that if I were going to be an intelligent change agent from some other dimension, I would want to do it that way. I would know. I would be enlightened enough to know that a dualistic kind of encounter, an argument, you know, a forcing, would not be the highest form of engagement. And I would indeed just keep dazzling with my beauty and my brilliance until finally the realization dawned in enough people that they actually could influence the rest, you know, and turn the tide. So I think they're doing this in a very, what I would consider to be enlightened sort of a way. I'm very in awe and respectful of the whole methodology that, you know, we are being treated to here.
Well,
and I also,
I
by the way,
really
like
asking,
the fact that... Beg pardon?
I said I was really asking because when you're going to the depths of interpretation, I thought you were looking for an answer to it, you know, like geometrically and the triangles that you explained. Because I feel just what you're saying, they're just there because they're there.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think that sending 10 films to all of Congress would make 5 cents worth of difference.
Well, who knows? You don't know. That's a good idea, though.
Who knows? But it was a great thought.
That catches my
fancy. Yeah, it was a great thought. Maybe out of all of them, you could find one who would say, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms of...
And you never know.
The other thing I want to say about intelligence is that each formation of the, let's say, good ones... really has a lot of information in it. And when the season is on, there's one website that creates a page for each formation that comes in. It's cropcircleconnector.com. And if you get on cropcircleconnector.com soon, April, it could start in April, smattering in April, and May smatters a little more, June it starts to get blown. If you go on those pages, you'll see that each formation, people will... contribute information to put on the page. And there'll be people from different disciplines. There'll be historians, there'll be archaeologists, there'll be philosophers, there'll be artists, there'll be people who know things about their particular field, and certainly mathematicians and geometers, who will add to the body of information of what each formation contains. And there's lots of stuff that's in each formation. Now, as I, you know, was saying before, I don't think that's about adding them all up. So that, you know, if you put them all together, you get
the message.
Yeah, I didn't
think that either. I just thought if they were looking for an answer, that maybe they could ask. But I think it's just beautiful to see them. I really follow them on the net. And I'm just experiencing the awesomeness of seeing it all over your screen. It's like, wow. You know?
But, you know, in a way, I kind of feel like we're sitting here like the apes, slamming our sticks into the ground around the white or the black monolith. We don't really understand what they mean yet. We just know they mean something, and we know we're having an experience when we get close to them, when we get inside of them, when we see them from the air. My youngest daughter, even when I got her into crop circles a few years ago, I just showed her a few pictures. The reaction was always the same. Wow, look at that. That is so cool. What do you do? I mean, you're having a reaction that does not have a language yet, or it doesn't have an alphabet. It doesn't have a meaning. There's no lexicon that allows us to communicate one with another what we feel. It's just wow. So maybe the lexicon is being built, and
it's the wow answer.
Yeah. As I said earlier, you know, it's just a few moments for them if they're dimensional travelers or travelers across space. But it's 100 years for us.
Yeah. You know, there are different speculations also about these things maybe not even being here for us to contemplate, even though we do, and, you know, we do to a great extent. But maybe they're here actually to plant some energy here that's useful to us, particularly the ones that are formed with sacred geometry, which is most of them. Sacred geometry is the way the whole universe is put together. Our bodies are put together. Plants are put together. Mm-hmm. It's the building block of form. And and we are so out of joint and have gone so, crazy in our perspectives and beingness, that maybe what these things are doing is pulling us back to this fundamental harmony, you know, that their energy deliverers or attractions or what have you, to reharmonize us with this master pattern of the universe. That's one of the speculations, you know. And who knows? I mean, maybe so. I like the one about, you know, the fact that we're being bombarded with intelligence whereby we'll get it, that we're not the only intelligence. And but these are speculations. They're all speculation. But this is what the channels get to. They get this kind of stuff.
What was that?
I want to thank you, lastly, for saying what you said about the war. Because I don't think that we have been in a frame of mind to actually take a look at what a dumb idea the war is.
Oh, really?
You know, we have people saying they don't like abortion, yet you can go to another country and kill somebody else's children. It's like,
I mean, really, isn't it just the most absurd
thing? It's really so crazy that if we don't begin to say how crazy it is, nobody has the room in their mind to think, oh, well, we do war. I mean, we've done it before, we'll do it again. Until we begin to hear someone else say the nonsense of what are we spending money on hurting somebody else for?
Oh, all of that. And, you know, we have these laws against killing, except you can do it in war, and then you turn your soldiers into murderers, and then they come back home, and, oh, my God, it's just
and
horrible.
They shoot somebody, and then they're on the wrong side of the law. So it's...
Yeah, but in war, it's not called killing. It's called attrition. And it's very businesslike and not human at all. And I don't think it's ever been civilized. And I think the way that... I mean, my ancestors did the same thing. The Scots that made up the Templars on the western side of Scotland. And the legend goes back to the 13th century. I mean, we've been involved in war for seven centuries, my family. So I'm the one that doesn't seem to get it, I guess. I don't think there's any glory in it at all.
You're the one that's going to change it.
Yeah, maybe so. I'll be the one to go back and buy the family castle away from the Brits.
That the ordinariness of war, as if it's okay, and that we don't even talk about that. We don't even talk about that fundamental perspective in which it's ridiculous to be doing this. You know, that's not part of our conversation yet, so...
Right, right. Well, we're coming up at the top of the hour. Nansalu, I really appreciate the phone call, and I love your insight on the crop circles.
Very intelligent call. I appreciated it a lot.
Yeah. Are you really quick, are you planning on going over there sometime in the future and seeing one for yourself?
I've been to England. I didn't know that they came every year. I looked at them, and I didn't know it was in just one specific place.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? And here you are, a really tuned-in person, and you don't even know what's going on. I mean, it's a fabulous phenomenon.
I look at them, I say, wow, but I didn't know it was a specific, you know, because most of the time you're so in the wow factor, you don't really say, now, what's that address?
Well, you go to cropcirclemovie.com, and you get my DVD.
I'm going to that. I already wrote it down.
All right, that's the place to go.
All right, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I thank you too. All right, we will we'll be back in about 4 minutes. We're going to take a really easy musical break, see if we can let the storm pass over a little bit. I feel a little nervous having headphones on my head during a lightning storm, but we'll be back in about 4 minutes with more X Squared Radio and our guest, Suzanne Taylor. Don't go away.